This is Susan Livingston reporting for Sequitur for the week ending 17 June 2016 for Expressions of Peace, Personal, Powerful, and Heart-to-Heart. Sequitur is archived under the Expressions of Peace radio tab at panina.org. That's P-A-N-I-N-A, as in peace and nonviolence in action. With habitat loss, ecological collapse, and consequent impending extinction as its main themes, Sequitur moves from our actions at the individual, community, cultural, and species levels to a place of acceptance of the natural consequences of those actions. Sequitur, it follows. Sequitur evolved from the Global Extreme Weather segment on Extinction Radio, which was conceived as a project of the Near-Term Human Extinction Support Group on Facebook, while Sequitur continues to report on the human response to extreme weather events and advances in climate research, it has expanded to include the whole web of life. Aho, mitakwe o asin, we are all related. Sequitur, the theme song, is by Zympht. That's Zympht. You can find more of his music on SoundCloud. In the climate headlines this week, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration announced that May was the 8th consecutive hottest month on record, reports the Weather Channel. While May 2016 broke the 7-month string of months that broke records by a full degree Celsius, May fell just short of this mark at 0.93 degrees Celsius above the average, earning it a secure 8th place. NASA points out that until October 2015 and dating back to 1880, the departure from average in a single month had never exceeded 1°C. And that all three of the hottest May averages have occurred in the most recent 3 years. The last cooler-than-average month in NASA's database was July 1985. NASA releases their data a few days before other world authorities, whose data differ in unimportant ways due to the use of a slightly different baseline. Summarizing NASA's data, the United Nations World Meteorological Organization reports, quote, "Fundamental change afoot in the global climate and continued warming, accompanied recently by unusually high rainfall in parts of the U.S. and Europe," unquote, says Global Climate Director David Carlson, who summarized the key points of the NASA report for the UK Daily Mail. The Arctic. Abnormal heat has caused Arctic sea ice and the Greenland ice sheet to start melting unusually early this year. Dr. Carlson says, quote, "What happens in the Arctic affects the rest of the globe. The question is, will the rate of change continue? Will it accelerate? We are in uncharted territory," unquote. Northern latitudes. Alaska had by far its warmest spring on record. The average May temperature was between 3 and 5 degrees warmer than usual in most regions in Finland, while the all-time record for the average temperature in May was broken at about 20 observation stations. Most recently, Newark, Greenland, saw a June record of 24.8°C on 9 June. Temperate latitudes. May's exceptional warmth coupled with extreme weather events brought abnormally heavy rains throughout Europe and the southern United States, such as the record flooding in Paris and Houston. Australia had its warmest autumn on record at 1.86°C above average. More than 53% of the country experienced record heat due to elevated water temperatures to the north and northwest of Australia. In last week's episode of Nature Bats Last, Guy McPherson presented recent research on the effects of this kind of warming on the dynamics of the Atlantic Ocean, and expressed some scornful incredulity toward the scientists who make alarming predictions about a future that's already here. He then describes the exponentiation of the temperature curve. It took 265 years for the global average temperature to increase by 1 degree Celsius, but only 4 months to increase by another half a degree. He concludes, quote, "Abrupt climate change is here. I am not puzzled," unquote. I love it when he is blatantly the kind of smart aleck I wish I had the courage to be. But here, listen for yourself.
The May 27th, 2016 issue of Manga Bay includes this headline, quote, "Scientists puzzled by slowing of Atlantic conveyor belt, warn of abrupt climate change." The paper refers to a recent write-up in the May 13, 2016 issue of Science by Eric Hand titled, "New Scrutiny for a Slowing Atlantic Conveyor." It seems most oceanographers, like most other scientists, are still puzzled and are still warning about the future that's already here. Allow me an example. Through the first 265 years of the Industrial Revolution until September 2015, the global average temperature of Earth increased 1 degree Celsius. And in the following 4 months, the temperature increased more than half a degree Celsius, in addition to the additional 1C. Abrupt climate change is here. I'm not puzzled.
That was a 45-second clip of Guy McPherson from Nature Bats Last, dated 7 June 2016. I am not puzzled either. Only those who feel entitled to have their cake and eat it too would be puzzled. Only those who expect to escape the consequences of their actions would be puzzled. Only those who worship science with the fervor of religious fundamentalism would be puzzled. What does puzzle me is why it has to cost the Canadian taxpayer $1.1 million to map a river basin in order to, quote, equip farmers with the tools they need to proactively manage business risks, unquote, according to the Winnipeg Sun. Say what? Proprietary information is a dangerous invention of industrial civilization. That work was done decades ago by the professional risk managers of the insurance industry who are hired by the farmers to manage their risks for them. Now they will pay again in the form of tax dollars, and then a third time when, not if, disaster strikes, since no amount of mapping will protect the land from a single bad development decision or extreme weather event. And on the risk management front, farmers in India are being lulled into complacency by the weather-based crop insurance scheme that, quote, covers loss of crop due to extreme weather conditions, unquote, reports The Hindu. I said the weather-based crop insurance scheme rather than a weather-based crop insurance scheme because its exclusivity is emphasized by awarding it the acronym WBCIS. So now farmers can quit worrying about their ruined crops and continue their poorly adapted agricultural practices in their increasingly unwelcoming habitat, because as long as they do what they are told, the bureaucrats will give them some money when their land is devastated, whether by drought or flood. This is profiteering on the misfortunes of others. In other words, sound competitive insurance industry practice. In direct contrast to this blatant monetization and outsourcing of risk, Agriculture for Impact's policy and research officer, Katrin Glatzel, wrote more than 1,000 words about drought mitigation in Africa for the Interpress service and only used the word insurance once, in passing, three-quarters of the way through her article. Instead, she spoke at length about risk reduction through development of a knowledge economy based on freely available weather information with existing cellular technology, and better agricultural curricula in the schools in a culture where up to 90% of the workforce is employed in that sector. Agriculture for Impact's Montpelier panel proposed a three-pronged approach for climate-smart agriculture: increase production, adapt to climate change, and reduce agriculture-related greenhouse gas emissions. Glatzel urges the integration of this approach into countries' national agriculture investment plans, so that it can become a more explicit part of the implementation of the Malabo Declaration. Glatzel says that agriculture in Zimbabwe, Malawi, and Madagascar took the worst hit from the climate change-driven recent El Niño, and she urged more diligence in pursuit of the 2014 Malabo Declaration, which unfortunately underestimated the effects and rate of climate change. But then so did the international scientific community. The declaration committed the 54 African Union member nations with a combined population of more than a billion to double agricultural productivity and end hunger by 2025, 5 years earlier than the so-called Sustainable Development Goals. On a more spiritual note, this week's cultural enhancement is a brief celebration of Starhawk's 65th birthday, which is today, Friday, 17 June. First, I'll give a brief bio, and then I'll share a reading. Starhawk is one of the most respected voices in modern Earth-based spirituality. She is the author or co-author of 12 books, including City of Refuge from 2015, the long-awaited sequel to the now classic Ecotopian novel The Fifth Sacred Thing from 20 years ago, and The Spiral Dance, a rebirth of the ancient religion of the Great Goddess, the essential text of the neo-pagan movement. Starhawk's most recent nonfiction book is The Empowerment Manual, a guide for collaborative groups on group dynamics, power, conflict, and communication. Her work has been translated into a dozen languages. Besides her significant presence on YouTube, Starhawk travels the world to offer her Earth Activist Training, a 2-week permaculture design certification program grounded in spirit and with a focus on organizing and activism. She is a champion of social permaculture, the application of permaculture principles to organizations, policy, and strategy. Like so many of my like-minded cohort, Starhawk is a veteran of anti-war and anti-nuke movements, and is deeply committed to bringing the techniques and creative power of spirituality to political activism. She is presently adjunct faculty at the California Institute of Integral Studies. On 13 May, I treated my Sequitur followers to a reading from the Declaration of the Four Sacred Things, the prologue of City of Refuge. Last week, I recorded it as a voiceover with the Sequitur theme music by Zimft and submitted it for possible inclusion in a happy birthday video that was being compiled for her. Today, in celebration of her birthday, I'll share an excerpt from her blog of 7 December 2014 titled, We Have Two Great Crises, in which she is reacting to the escalation of the Black Lives Matter movement in response to the epidemic of police shootings of people of color, especially young black men. She wrote, quote, I start my talks these days by saying that we have two great crises, climate change and the concentration of wealth and power in fewer and fewer hands. And they are the same crisis. And these police executions are part of that crisis. When we say Black Lives Matter, Brown Lives Matter, Women's Lives Matter, when we insist that the lives of the homeless, the mentally ill, the imperfect specimens of humanity we all are, all matter, we stand for a different system. This is not a black movement that some noble-hearted white people are getting behind. It is all of our struggle. All of our lives are at stake. For when the powers that be can pick off some of us, they intimidate and divide and silence all of us. And we need all of us now to stand for a world where life matters more than profits and control. All of our lives are at stake, albeit some more immediately and obviously. Unquote. Happy birthday, dear Starhawk. Happy birthday to you. And on a more humorous note, the Birmingham Mail documented a new anthropogenic weather phenomenon secondary to urban flooding as the rushing water organized into a whirlpool. In a frenzy of hypervigilance regarding gender neutrality, the Tipton Fire Station attributed the whirlpool to a missing person inspection cover. Say what? I kid you not. Could they have been referring to a storm drain cover? New Covenant Worship reports on a tent revival that was evacuated due to extreme weather. Evacuation, it's not just for music festivals anymore. It must have been another instance of failed forecasting, because a Google search revealed that this is an organization with a history of deferring to Mother Nature when extreme weather threatens, not waiting until it happens to evacuate participants. Other organizers of major outdoor events are bolder, and for festivals like this weekend's Electric Daisy Carnival in Las Vegas, participants even welcome the challenge of such a threat. A peculiar, masochistic form of climate change denial, in my opinion. The LA Weekly predicts daytime temperatures in the mid-40s C, with nighttime lows remaining at 33 C or higher for this year's festival, and admonished participants to bring plenty of sunscreen and water. The Weekly warned about the synergistic effect of extreme weather, strenuous activity such as dancing, and the use of methylene deoxymethamphetamine, more commonly known as MDMA or ecstasy. While dehydration is an insidious risk factor in the hot, dry desert environment, the Weekly warned that hyponatremia or sodium deficiency from drinking too much water can also be fatal. According to an analysis by the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research, enhanced connectivity of the global network of supply can amplify production losses. In addition to the obvious global effects of local extreme weather events such as floods and tornadoes on production and transportation infrastructure, local heat stress-related worker productivity reductions affect global supply chains. The study examined impacts not only in manufacturing and shipping, but also in agriculture, construction, communication, and other economic sectors. Co-author Anders Leverman concludes, quote, "In a warming world with more intense weather extremes, it is likely that society needs to become more resilient and more flexible," unquote. Note that resilience and flexibility are anathema to machine values such as punctuality and efficiency that are so essential for a thriving capitalist economy. In an analysis of this study for Reuters, author Megan Rowling adds that Leverman noted a marked contrast between the first decade studied, from 1991 to 2001, which did not suffer increased production losses, and the decade from 2001 to 2011, which definitely did. Leverman said, quote, "Our study shows it's really one world with respect to climate impacts," close quote. The Bangkok Post also covered this study, among others. The study was published in the journal Science Advances. Paul Ausick, writing for 24/7 Wall Street, attributes the decline in global oil supply to the oil sands fire in Canada, militant attacks against Nigerian facilities, political turmoil in Libya, and extreme weather in Iraq. With the decline comes increased demand and therefore increased prices. Continental Resources Incorporated CEO and founder Harold Hamm says that when prices reach $60 a barrel, new drilling becomes economic. Hamm predicts that prices will hit $70 a barrel by the end of this year. An end to subsidies would go a long way toward encouraging consumers to spend their energy and transportation dollars in a more principled way, and perhaps even adopt 100-mile consumption patterns. According to a study by the Laboratory for Climate and Environment Sciences to be published in the journal Hydrology and Earth System Sciences, climate change is the cause of the recent flooding in Paris. The likelihood of such extreme rainfall has increased by more than 40%, up to 100%, in the past 5 decades. The Seine River reached more than 6 meters, or almost 20 feet. 18 people were killed in 4 countries. Writing for Alternet, Elliot Negin provides a sterling example of the kind of straw man polarization that I referenced at the close of last week's show that passes for clever progressive journalism in this country, when he makes a sophomoric comparison between the flooding in Texas and the flooding in France, which happen to share irrelevant characteristics such as geographical size and a reputation for fine cuisine, but whose respective political responses are presented as opposites. Negin accuses both Governor Greg Abbott, who suggested that climate change has become politicized, true, and U.S. Representative Lamar Smith, who suggested that there were non-human causes in play, of being climate change deniers, as if proof of human agency renders all non-human causes specious. Neither of them denies climate change per se, and the quotes Negin cites to support his accusation are from 2 and 3 years ago, before attribution was a recognized science in the peer-reviewed community. While I agree that the French response and the Texan response to their respective flooding has been very different, this kind of polarization increases the defensiveness of anthropogenic climate change skeptics and detracts from Negin's important and valid follow-the-money point. While corporations are not allowed to donate money or provide services to political candidates or political parties in France, in Texas it's a very different story. Abbott, a former Texas attorney general, accepted $4.2 million in contributions in 2014 in his gubernatorial campaign, more than twice the amount he got from any other sector. As for Smith, the oil and gas industry has been his leading patron during his nearly 30 years in office, with Koch Industries and Valero Energy at the top of the list at a combined amount of almost $200,000. Greater Manchester and Cheshire had flash floods that forced evacuations and landslides that disrupted train lines last weekend, reports the BBC. According to the Greek reporter, flash floods also followed a cluster of tornadoes that descended early this week upon Thrace, an inland state in the largely agricultural northeastern section of the country. Trees were uprooted, crops were flattened, and vehicles were swept away, but no injuries were reported. Damage to the land and loss of livelihood were significant, but without the urban overdevelopment that characterizes more high-profile disasters, the dollar amount of property damage will not be impressive. In a scathing indictment of wetland destruction by overdevelopment in a privileged economy, Rick Murdocco, writing for the Long Island Press, points out that, quote, fortifications touted by public policymakers and utility operators should accelerate recovery efforts in a storm's aftermath, but they do little to address the larger issues of the island's vulnerability to extreme weather. Coastal development policies have long allowed water views and real estate pricing to trump sound planning so that every strong storm weather event is now essentially guaranteed to result in property loss, unquote. Preach it, brother. Tonga is once again underwater after 27.3 centimeters of rain fell in 24 hours between 1 p.m. last Friday and 1 p.m. the next day, reports Matangi Tonga. No rainfall for a 24-hour period in June has exceeded this amount in the last 36 years of records. In fact, this is more than three times the historical average of less than 8 centimeters for the whole month of June. For comparison, Cyclone Winston broke the 24-hour rainfall record in February when it brought 29.4 centimeters of rain in a single day. But that was during the wet season, which theoretically ended at the end of April. Although June 2006 saw 36 centimeters of rain, the largest single-day rainfalls that month were 0.6 centimeters on the 9th and 0.7 centimeters on the 30th. It was also unusual because the rainfall forecast for June to August 2016 was for drier than normal conditions for most of Tonga. Tongans were even warned to conserve water. Another unusual factor is that the system that brought the rain originated in eastern Australia and remained coherent as it crossed 3,500 kilometers of ocean. That's awesome power. Speaking of Australia, researchers from the University of Queensland attribute the extinction of the Bramble K. melimus, or mosaic-tailed rat, to anthropogenic climate change, reports the Weather Channel. Yes, the Weather Channel. In spite of climatologists' characterization of meteorologists as a den of deniers. The small sandy Bramble Cay that was its only known habitat was a part of the Great Barrier Reef until extreme weather events combined with sea level rise erased the island from the seascape. This is the first mammal to succumb to climate change. In a sad reflection on our cultural priorities and the scholarly research process itself, the species had not been observed in almost 10 years, and the confirming data for the study were collected 2 years ago, prior to the onset of the current coral bleaching event. Who knew? According to the official government news portal of Sri Lanka, total damage to fisheries from Cyclone Roanu is estimated at more than $663,000, but that's only the beginning. According to a report in Reuters, the initial insurance claim alone was close to $1 million for disaster relief that left 89 dead, while 102 are still listed as missing by the Disaster Management Center. The Sri Lanka Red Cross estimated that fewer than 10% of the 220 families living in the landslide area have been traced so far. That authority also calculates that 691 houses were destroyed, while about 4,900 sustained damage. But Finance Minister Ravi Karunanayake said that the government expects the estimate of houses damaged to rise to about 128,000, with about a sixth of those requiring complete rebuilding. He said, quote, "They were underwater for 7 days. That is no joke," close quote. No, the joke is the so-called right to return, with losses compensated by the insurance company at the rate of $17,000 for loss of a home or small business and $670 for loss of a life. Is it worth the risk? The policy costs the government $2 million, and the people are just as dead and the three villages just as destroyed as if they had been uninsured. Is it worth the money? Writing for Star 2, Mangay Balasegaram says that a 90-centimeter sea level rise is enough to swamp most Malaysian coastal cities and urges forest preservation and fire prevention, particularly the discontinuation of open-burning agricultural practices. She writes that while trees are carbon sinks, peatlands store even more carbon. A Malaysian firm recently lost suppliers after its so-called sustainability certification from an industrial watchdog was revoked. According to the World Resources Institute, peatlands emit up to 200 times as much carbon dioxide when burned as forest fires, as well as methane. A report in the journal Nature found that the 1997 forest and peat fires in Indonesia led to the biggest jump in carbon dioxide levels ever recorded, an amount estimated to be 13 to 40% of the entire world's annual carbon emissions. The 2015 fires released over 1 billion tons, more than Britain's entire annual output. At the peak of the 2015 haze, daily carbon emissions exceeded daily emissions from the entire American economy. According to Asian Development Bank's Vice President of Knowledge Management and Sustainable Development, Bambang Susantono, missing data frustrates sound policymaking in Southeast Asia, reports Project Syndicate. Efficient resource management is undermined by lack of data about, for example, how much water is diverted for agricultural and human consumption. Accurate data are also needed to design the right irrigation systems, dams, and embankments, and to build them where they will have the greatest impact in terms of mitigating the effects of climate change. Though agriculture consumes about 80% of freshwater stocks in Asia, most countries cannot correctly measure how much water is used to grow a crop and how much of that water is reused downstream. The data are readily available through the Open Access Water Accounting Plus software system to access information about land use, rainfall, and temperature, and to determine how much water is available in a river basin, how much is being used for various purposes, and how water use has changed over time. Asian Development Bank and UNESCO are working together to jumpstart dissemination of this vital information in India, Indonesia, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, and Uzbekistan, as well as hard-hit Cambodia and Vietnam. According to a new study of data from the Mauna Loa Observatory published in Nature Climate Change, this year will be the first time in recorded history that atmospheric carbon dioxide surpasses 400 parts per million for the entire year. Researchers predict that the September slump in the annual emissions cycle will only reduce atmospheric carbon dioxide levels to 401.48 plus or minus 0.53 parts per million, and that the recent El Niño will boost the increase from 2.1 parts per million, its annual rate of change since measurements began in 1958, to 3.15 plus or minus 0.53 parts per million. Writing for the Block Island Times, Gloria Redlich reports on a talk by geoscientist Michael Oppenheimer at the University of Rhode Island, sponsored by the Coastal Resources Management Council. With the notable exception of Boston, Los Angeles, Delaware, New Jersey, and New York City, Oppenheimer finds that in the U.S., quote, "the political and psychological obstacles are substantial," close quote, with regard to taking decisive action, while in Europe, climate change is being addressed in ways that, quote, never existed within this country, unquote. He explained that the modest-sounding vertical sea level rise numbers translate to 100-meter horizontal coastline losses. In a University of Texas at Austin study published on Monday in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, lead author Sudip Chakraborty found that increased aerosol content in clouds can multiply the intensity of storm systems by increasing their capacity to hold moisture and extending their life expectancy by 3 to 24 hours. Aerosols come from natural sources such as desert dust or volcanic ash, or from human sources such as the burning of wood, coal, or oil, reports the Science Daily. And what about cloud seeding to coax rain from otherwise benign clouds? And what about the open-burning agricultural geoengineering that's been used to clear land for centuries and longer? The fossil fuel extraction industry and the transportation sector are not the only villains in this tale. The southern China monsoon displaced as many as 30,000 people in 5 provinces after as much as 13 centimeters of rain fell in 3 hours, reports Al Jazeera. ECNS reports that China is donating $24.6 million worth of rice to Zimbabwe to mitigate the effects of the recent drought. And as part of a $1.6 million infrastructure improvement package, the receiving and processing system to access data from China's Fengyang 3 series of satellites, along with 1,600 radios, is to be distributed in rural villages to ensure direct dissemination of warnings and forecasts of extreme weather conditions. More than 70% of Zimbabwe's 13 million population live in rural areas, and the economy is largely agriculture-based. Zimbabwean farmers lack sufficient irrigation facilities and are thus vulnerable to change of rainfall patterns. Boston University's Pardee Center director Anthony Janitos was interviewed live on the Morning Edition show on National Public Radio's affiliate WBUR on 9 June after the announcement that Boston will host the U.S.-China Climate Leaders Summit for city officials from both countries in 2017. Janitos talked about the city of Boston's leadership role in using local building codes and transportation policies to both plan for more frequent floods and other extreme weather events and to help reduce the amount of greenhouse gases emitted to the atmosphere. He said there is, quote, no particular reason why cities need to wait for national governments to act, close quote. Lead author of a new study in the journal Nature Communications, Marco Tedesco, describes the complex ways in which the Arctic's climate is heading for uncharted territory, reports Inside Climate News. The study discusses the increasing amplitude of the north-south meanderings of the polar jet stream and the way in which it locks in high pressure over Greenland, creates those omega blocks over the North American Great Plains, and invites warm, moist air from the Gulf of Mexico into Arctic latitudes. Tedesco found that the Greenland melt season was some 30 to 40 days longer than average in the summer of 2015. The Greenland ice sheet alone has enough volume to increase sea level by 20 feet or 6 meters. Another consequence of the slack jet stream is more frequent visits from the polar vortex in the wintertime. Ambassadors experienced polar amplification firsthand during their recent annual 10-day Arctic retreat, reports the Nunatsiaq News. While 1.5 or 2C warming seems like a good idea to gardeners in temperate regions, it is blatantly obvious that these are only averages designed to erase any indication of variability. Climate change is on the agenda at the 29 June Leaders Summit in Ottawa. Will the ambassadors succeed in conveying their sense of urgency to the deciders? Vietnam produces 20% of the world's rice, and half of Vietnam's rice, 70% of its aquaculture products, and one-third of its gross domestic product come from 9 provinces in the Mekong Delta region, where 1.2 million people are caught between salinization from sea level rise downstream and overdevelopment upstream, that blocks and pollutes the traditional source of fresh water and disrupts the natural reparative mechanisms of the floodplain ecology. The Tuaitre News reports that the World Bank has approved a $310 million loan to help farmers adapt agriculture and aquaculture methods to climate change. Writing for Ghana Web on the first anniversary of a twin flood and fire disaster that killed 159 people in Accra, Francis Ahito notes that nobody should be surprised or puzzled by the return of the monsoon rains. Instead of passing the buck to corporations or government, he urges citizens to dispose properly of their trash so that storm drains remain clear. It's not that expensive to provide public waste receptacles, and enforcement of disposal laws could be a rich source of revenue. Accra had 18 centimeters of rain on Sunday, more than would be expected for the entire month of June, the wettest month of the year, with an average rainfall of 17.8 centimeters, reports Al Jazeera. 10 or 12 people died in the weekend flooding. German Federal Minister for Economic Cooperation and Development Gerd Müller has developed a 10-point action plan to protect more marine areas, organize a larger share of worldwide fishing in a sustainable way, and reduce the amount of rubbish that ends up in the oceans, reports Development and Cooperation. More important, he is calling for economic support for the initiative through the reallocation of fossil fuel subsidies. Here's the plan. 1. Create more marine reserves and manage them better. The goal is to protect 10% of the world's marine areas by 2020. 2. Foster sustainable artisanal fishing and aquaculture. According to estimates, 10 to 12% of the world's population, or about 58 million people, generate their income directly or indirectly in this sector. 3. Foster sustainability and social responsibility in fish processing and marketing. Fisheries are being depleted, and labor conditions fail to meet international standards. 4. Assist partner countries in the fight against illegal, unregulated, and informal fishing. Such practices impede sustainable resource management, deprive local people of an important source of food, and hamper the development of the local economy. The global economic impact is estimated at $23 billion. 5. Set up strategic partnerships with businesses. There is dire need for consciousness raising in the coastal and maritime tourist industries. 6. Offer incentives and visibility to partner countries with waste management systems that reduce maritime pollution by treating waste appropriately, reducing the amount of garbage, and recycling a greater share. 7. Draft strategies to cope with potentially irreversible damages of marine ecosystems from acidification, warming, and overfishing. Research projects that help to better understand causes and effects and that result in options for action will be supported, including alternative job opportunities for people who lose their livelihoods due to environmental damage, as well as initiatives to help poor people to cope with disasters. 8. Assist coastal regions in the adaptation to climate change. In an apparently irreversible global trend, 2/3 of the world's population is expected to live in coastal cities in the near future. Adaptation means planning ahead. 9. Set up more early warning systems for the effects of climate change. Even today, more than 600 million people in low-lying coastal areas suffer from effects of climate change such as storms, floods, soil salinization, and the rising sea level. Sustainable development planning must include flood and disaster protection as well as early warning systems. 10. Support cross-cutting cooperation across borders. The Partnership for Regional Ocean Governance is an international initiative that is geared to assist nations and regional organizations in creating innovative strategies for marine protection. Although the U.S. is among the 168 signatories to the Convention on Biological Diversity of 24 years ago that made many of these same promises, it failed to ratify the convention. The federal government in this country is too busy with its perpetual election cycle and only takes an interest in matters of global importance when there are resources immediately at stake. Tech Insider reports on a new tiny house made from 24 bonded layers of cardboard, wrapped in foil for weatherproofing. It's a Dutch invention called a Wickelhaus by a company called Fiction Factory, and they're meant to last for 100 years. 3 54-square-foot modules sell for $29,000. So far, they are only available in the Netherlands, Belgium, Luxembourg, France, Germany, the United Kingdom, and Denmark. El Niño is officially dead, and La Niña is more likely close on his heels than not. Yet predictions are for an average hurricane season in the Atlantic. How can that be? Writing for Mashable, Andrew Friedman says that we won't feel the onset of La Niña until fall, and the effects will be felt in the Southwest Pacific long before the southeast coast of North America is affected. The intervening summer months are termed La Nada, or ENSO neutral. So a strong La Niña will result in a powerful hurricane season, but not until next year. CarbFix is a new carbon sequestration technology, not a dietary aid, developed in Iceland that mixes carbon dioxide emissions with water and pumps it into basalt, the black volcanic rock that comprises much of the world's oceanic seafloor, where it mineralizes and remains stable for centuries, reports Radio France International. And the method works with seawater, so it's ideally suited to existing coastal fossil fuel-based power plants. I wonder if it would be a reasonable repair mechanism for land damaged by fracking or subsidence. Academy Award-winning documentarian Charles Ferguson says there is a good reason why authoritarian oligarchies are the worst nations at dealing with climate change, reports Big Think. Ferguson says, quote, "The countries in the world that are the most prosperous and have the most equal distribution of income and wealth, and also the longest life expectancies, are in general the countries that are dealing best with climate change. Germany, Scandinavia, Japan, a number of European countries," unquote. While countries that are very corrupt, have a great deal of poverty and inequality, or are most dependent on fossil fuel or on industrial agriculture controlled by a very small number of people, such as Venezuela, Indonesia, Russia, and Saudi Arabia, are coping less well. Interestingly, the U.S. is not on either list. However, I agree wholeheartedly with Ferguson's closing statement, quote, "And so I came to realize that if we deal with political corruption, we'll also be dealing with climate change. And conversely, if we deal with climate change, we'll also help the world a lot with regard to corruption and inequality." Close quote. Thanks for following Sequitur on Expressions of Peace Radio, archived at panina.org. Until next time, this is Susan Livingston. We'll be right back.
it here. Follow it back to the zero field. There's only metaphors and puns. It tells us then that there is no seeking, 'cause what connects us is one.